little something between you and me. Don't cost you nothing, this one's for free.
Let's try then. Do you want to go for the explanation? I mean, I know it's arbitrary, but so let's have a go and see what we can do. Yeah.
Okay. So from what you've told me, I think I can give you an idea of what I think is going on, if that's okay. So I'm just going to go for it. What I think this feeling could be is related to the events that have happened and how you sadly recently lost your dad. And what can happen when we're at very difficult times, very sad times, is that we can have feelings in our body that are related with how we're feeling in our mind, and that can sometimes cause symptoms to come about, and we do see sometimes this kind of symptom coming when people are very distressed.
Okay, stop. That's fine. It's really hard to do this. Does anyone else, rather than sort of pick that apart, let's just hold that there. It's difficult. And does anyone else want to get in the hot seat and have a go at explaining it?
Because they have patients like that and had to send them to ENT, actually. Okay.
You didn't. Because, you will have to, okay.
Yes, but I mean, in this case, you know, you say that, yeah, it caused some muscle, you know, some muscle spasms, which is like, okay, it's kind of explanation. And also we mentioned the sensation. I think it was good,
Anyway,
this is actually really timely, isn't it? Because we spoke about this patient after the patient had gone. And it would be tricky, but what I'd like to do is to turn this around and make it, because it's live for you to have the opportunity to use some forms of words. Now, all of our explanations for each problem evolve. Sometimes saying less is more, but sometimes certain explanations work better. But I think the explanations that work are the explanations that come from the patient. So it's hard when I'm not with the patient to be able to know what sort of words to use. So what you try now won't work for every patient, but what you want is a story that comes from the patient to find out where the evolution was. What were they thinking and feeling at the time that this started? So let's put together that imaginary scenario for you, for this patient that you saw this week, and see if you can turn that around. So you're...
So you want to be
the doctor, and Amal, if you can be the patient, maybe you can give some more colour to the patient. If you can tell Amal a little bit more detail about the patient that you saw before we run through it.
So, she's an elderly lady. She's always been like a warrior, like she worries a lot.
Okay.
So just before you say anything more, what did you notice in your own heads? He just started a description.
She's old and a warrior.
Correct. So you've got two things which push you one way and the other way very quickly, didn't they? Elderly, we've got to be more careful. More black swans to look for here. But she's a warrior, okay? But worrying people die. It's by a million. So it's a bit more complicated already, right? Keep going.
Yes.
But see how you're doing with that all the time. And what this is about is being mindful of how you do it, so you're doing it better with more evidence and more thoughtfully. Yep, good.
She, I think she moved house recently, or she's under like financial stress. Okay. And I think that's when she started having this feeling.
Okay.
I think her mom died of throat cancer.
Okay.
And she started having panic attacks because of the feeling.
Okay. Okay.
And she is not on any medications. She doesn't want to try any medications.
Okay.
Okay. So she's clear about it, yeah.
We're going to spare Amal
from all of the things.
The need to actually relate that.
Yes.
So we're going to jump straight through to the explanation, because you've got the context, you've got the language that the patient presented to you, and you're now going to give a bash at an explanation based on what may be useful in this situation. Yeah.
So, from what you told me and from the examination, I mean, the story and the tests we've done before, I think what you've got is nothing serious or nothing sinister, actually. So I don't think you've got throat cancer at the moment. You don't show any signs of throat cancer. What you've got, I think, what sometimes we give it like a fancy word, we call it like globus pharyngeus, which just mean like sometimes the brain sends some signals that there's something wrong in the throat because you're thinking about it. Mm-hmm. It might start sometimes with a new case with a cough and then cold, mm-hmm. but then because you're thinking more about it, then your body and your brain will send signals.
Okay, to your throat. Pause at that point.
Yeah.
You did two things there, which the two ways that Zaid did that. Which way did you like better? He said, your brain, you think about it and your brain sends signals to your throat. And the second time he says, you become more concerned about it, you become more aware of your throat or something. Mm.
And that second one.
Yeah. I think the danger of the first one is it says, I thought about it and it made it happen. May be the case, but it's less helpful and less acceptable. The second one is it usually starts with something like either a viral infection or a real emotional turmoil. And that gives you, do you remember the phrase, a lump in your throat? It brought a tear to my eye, a lump to my throat when something really emotional happens. So it usually starts with something happening in your throat. But it's what happens next that helps us understand what might be going on in this case. Yeah? Yeah, okay. So keep going.
Yes, so it might start, like you say, with the viral illness, but then being more aware of it and also being under stress recently, it made your mind thinking, no, it's something there. And it sends signals to your throat, and the muscles in your throat, to give you some spasms and then give you the feeling that there's a lump over there.
Okay.
I think I'll give the patient some time.
Yes. Okay. So what do you? How do you think about that?
So how do you feel about that, or how do you think about that?
Well, I mean, doctor, it just explains what happened. So there's something wrong there with the muscle spasms then. Is it something that should be worried about him?
No. So it's if you know that's not a sign of cancer, then that's, I think, more reassuring, isn't it, to you or no? So it's not a sign of cancer, I mean. Mm. And it should, by 2 or 3 weeks, it should feel better. Okay. Mm. By itself, yeah.
Okay, time out, pause. he's not looking convinced, is he?
Yes.
A bit of a shame. But how do we feel? What any more help we can get? Can we strengthen this anymore?
You could say, I sometimes say, use the advantage you've got of saying, I've seen this before.
Yeah.
Someone else has something very similar, and it was a very difficult time in their life, and they had just this, and it was all due to that. And we do see this commonly, something like that. That might persuade her that it's not, he's not just passing her off.
Could you kind of, you know how sometimes with people with pain, you can say just because it's painful doesn't mean it's harmful. So you could say, although these symptoms are very real, it doesn't mean that there's anything worrying going on underneath.
Yes.
That kind of another.
I mean, I certainly think it's really important to emphasize that you're not imagining this.
Mm.
This is a very real thing, and it can be very disturbing, and it can be very troublesome to people. So it's very important you understand that. I think the one thing that I think might help a bit more is an upfront frame at the beginning. So I say, so I've listened very carefully to this story. I've examined you. I've asked you some very specific questions. And that's because my first job as your doctor is to make absolutely sure we don't miss something that might kill you, like a cancer. And I can understand that that's a concern for you. And that's my first objective, okay? So what I've done is listen very carefully, examine you, and ask some specific questions, particularly about the fact that you're swallowing okay, you're not losing any weight, you're not choking at all. You also told me, which was very helpful and interesting, that you tend to notice it more in the night and in the evenings, and that it's not quite so obvious to you during the day or when you're busy. And that's very helpful because that is very typical of what we call globus pharyngeus and very untypical of serious structural disorder. So for a variety of reasons, and I'm, of course, and only Farang is able to do this because he carries some weight of age with him as well, are able to say, and I've sat in this seat for a long time. Keith could manage it.
But only just.
Because he looks too young still. But I don't. You know, and I can do that. But you can't. But you can say, this is my job. This is what I have to do. So I'm going to be as upset as you are. You possibly wouldn't say that. No. You can't be as upset as they are. But, you know, that's my job, is to be really careful about these things, okay? But it's also my job not to put you through tests that won't help or that are potentially harmful in their own right. And for all of those reasons, let me try and explain how this works, yeah?
So to be able to convince your patient that they haven't got something nasty wrong with them, you have to convince yourself. And there's nothing wrong with you sharing your trade secrets with your patient, because ultimately that's what you do when you ask them to leave the surgery, is you safety net them. You tell them what the red flags are. You tell them when, under what circumstances you need to see them again. So this is exactly what Dave's just done, is to share those symptoms that confirm that they don't have cancer with them, and also those positive symptoms that identify this as being a functional problem. So this, we use the big word globus pharyngeus, and it's always, you're always uncertain whether to use that type of language, aren't you? But I think in this context, it's okay to give it an official label, as long as you then explain it and then allow them access to it. So that's fine.
And you can also do a thing, which is when you've had this for a while, you may notice you've got into a habit of checking whether it's still there. And sometimes that might be by feeling or sometimes by swallowing. Now, that actually has some disadvantages, because if you keep doing this, you can actually irritate it a little bit. And those symptoms, you're still hearing those symptoms in your brain, and that can keep the whole loop going. And one of the problems is, when you're anxious about any part of your body, you ask your brain very naturally to pay attention to it. And when you ask your brain to pay attention to an area, it's fantastically good at doing that, and it will give you more signals from that area. By the same token, when your brain is being asked to pay attention to something else, it will stop noticing symptoms from this area. However, if you had cancer in your throat, that wouldn't happen. It would give you signals all the time, even when you were distracted by other things. And that's one of the ways we tell the difference. Those would be my two extra bits.
It's very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good. Well done, everyone.
Let's hear it for our GP. Skills improving, risk removing.